Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
Hello, this is David Hepworth with a special Word in Your Ear. I'm joined by friend of the podcast, and previous guest at Word in Your Ear, John Savage. Hello, John.
Hello, David.
Nice. Where are we speaking to you from?
Beaumaris, Anglesey, on a sleety, cold, late winter day.
Right, absolutely. And we're gathered here to just talk about your new compilation album that you've put together. John Savage's 1967, the year pop divided. And the last time we spoke, John, it was about your book about 1966. Is this connected? Is this your next project? Do you get asked by people if your next book is going to be about 1967?
Yes, I was asked whether I had a new book coming out at the same time, and I said, get out of here. 1966 was hard enough work. I'm taking a bit of a break, David, letting the well fill up again. But what happened is that the 1966 comp on Ace, which Ace did last year, or no, in fact, it was the end of 2015, did quite well. And we all enjoyed working together because they're great to work with. I've known Rogers for years and years and years, since the days of Rocks Off in Soho Market, would be 30 years ago. Used to go and buy records there. And it's a pleasure to work with them. And so we decided to do another one, which is 1967, which is the compilation at issue. And we're going to do a third one, which we're just beginning to plan right now. So it's going to be a trilogy.
So you've always been keen on compilations, is that fair to say?
Yes, I think what's nice, and you probably have this as well, is that you move from being a critic. I mean, I began writing for the music press as an enthusiast. And then because it comes thick and fast, when you're actually writing for music press, which I did now over 40 years ago, so it's a long time ago, you do become a critic and you do say bad things about things as well as good things. But then starting to do compilations, which I have been doing for now for about 12, 13 years, takes you back to being an enthusiast, which is why we all got into this. And it's a very good feeling. I really enjoy it.
And did you start doing this sort of stuff when you were a teenager? Were you one of those people with a cassette player and lined up next to the radio and so forth, putting together your own compilations? Do you remember doing that?
I certainly do. I actually have a little notebook here from 1967, which has my recorded playlists, the tracks that I heard on Radio Caroline South. And it was actually invaluable when putting this together because there's so many records I'd forgotten, as well as the two CDs of 67. There was obviously some wasted, some records couldn't get because Ace are very scrupulous about this and very, very hard working. You know, Liz Buckley and Mick Patrick, who I've worked with on this, have worked so hard, you know, to do all the proper business. But there's another CD of tracks that I just have no memory of, which I've just done on iTunes. I'm always burning iTunes compilations. Of records, you know, by the Californians and by Sounds Around, which is all stuff I heard on Radio Caroline 67, recorded in my book. And what's interesting about it, and I'm sure you think about this as well, is that at any given time, there is the pop sound of the moment. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating hearing the pop sound of 67 applied to mainstream pop records. So you know, there's a bit of psych, a few strings, a bit of spacey lyrics, and it's kind of great.
So let's get an idea of the kind of stuff you've got here. There's very well-known stuff like The Byrds, Say You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star, and Sonny and Cher's The Beat Goes On. But there's also less well-known stuff like The Attack, and Try It, and so forth, and what else have we got here? And then there's kind of soul hits like The Barclays, Soulfinger, Aretha Franklin's Respect, lesser-known things like... lesser-known stuff from people who became quite well-known later, like Terry Reid with Peter Jay's Jaywalkers doing The Hand Don't Fit the Glove. So, you know, give us an idea of the kind of scope of how you put this together.
Well, it's very much to do with how I heard pop music at the age of 13 on Radio Caroline South. And they mixed everything up. Obviously, the Pirates, and this is pretty much the last gospel Radio Caroline. It was going in 68, I remember. But in 1967 was obviously the year that the Pirates were outlawed in August. And they had a much wider playlist than the BBC, which was still very restricted at the time. And they played a lot of American records. And so what you'd hear is you'd hear Buffalo Springfield next to Joe Tex. And you'd have mainstream pop records, of which there are some on this, mainstream sounding pop records, which there's some on this compilation. They weren't necessarily hits, but it was a pop sound of the day by the Marmalade or the Searchers or people like that, along with Captain Beefheart or Booker T and the MGs. So it's a whole kind of mashup. And what's happened since, obviously, is that you're only allowed to like Psych, you're only allowed to like Soul. But in fact, I experienced, and you probably did at the time as well, all these things put together. And in fact, this is one of the reasons why Ace seem to enjoy doing these compilations, is that they're not solely genre-based.
It's so true, because listening to it, the thing it took me back to is in Wakefield, where I was living in 1967, I think the first disco, and I think they even called it a discotheque at the time, came to Wakefield, which was great excitement. And in order to publicise it, they had an attempt on the world DJing record, and the DJ played for 48 hours or whatever. And you just turned up any hour of the day or night and listlessly danced near his DJ station. And this is the kind of mix of records he played. People just played absolutely everything at that point, because it was all aimed at one pop chart, really, wasn't it? There's no subculture to aim at. It was one culture.
And in a way, the thing that happens in 67, absolutely, and the thing that happens in 67 is that the subculture starts to develop by the end of the year. And it's very interesting. I found an ad for W.H. Smith at the end of the year, which lists about 40 albums, psychedelic albums, near psychedelic albums that you could buy. And suddenly you notice that it's not beginning to be aimed not all at one chart. And I'm a product of that one chart moment. And I loved it because you'd hear everything, including records that you hated. And I do make that point that somewhere in March, April, there is this absolutely dreadful top 10 full of Engelbert Humperdinck and two versions of This Is My Song. And those records just made me want, just made me want to die with boredom. I mean, you remember this. And the experience of the 60s as a pop fan, until the end of the 60s, really, certainly in this year, certainly 66 and before, 64, 65, 63, is that you'd hear all these dreadful records and then suddenly you'd hear the Yardbirds or the Stones or the Kinks or the Supremes. And those records would leap out at you, and that would make it much more intense.
Absolutely. It's the intensity of your affection for these records grew in direct proportion to how difficult they were to get to hear them. That you couldn't guarantee that they were going to turn up in the next half hour, could you?
No, and in many ways, it's fascinating going back and looking at the history of things, because it's quite different from what people think. A lot of people don't really, care particularly about pop music. They'll just listen to what they hear or what's in the charts or what's being promoted. But and the sort of general idea of the 60s is that it's something like a sort of, Austin Powers going down Humphrey Street in his Union Jack E-type. And it just wasn't like that.
No. People were not wearing flares in 1967, were they?
A few were. And also, maybe people wanted to. The thing is also, that counter to that, obviously, was the fact you had a very, very... If you look at the music press and the youth media at that time, which you as a magazine fan, would know, is that it was incredibly sophisticated. And with all the magazines, the weeklies and the monthlies, Rave and Fabulous 208 and Record Mirror and Disco Music Echo, they probably reached about 1 million kids a month. So you had all this stuff being pumped out to a very large teenage audience.
Mm. Now, the thing that strikes me about this stuff, listening to all of it, and just a few more names here, you've got the Piccadilly Line, but you've got also Diana Ross and the Supremes, Reflection. You got the Fortunes. You got the Marmalade. You got Four Tops. I think I think you talk about Baroque Motown, don't you? Which is I like that expression. It's very good.
I did a comp about 10, 15 years ago for Motown. Called The Shadows of Love, which was 66 to 68, which is pure Baroque Motown. This is Hollandosia Holland going completely imperial just before they actually left Motown in 68. And so you've got harpsichords. You've got a harpsichord in the Gladys Knight, Take Me in Your Arms and Love Me. You've got oscillations, psychedelic effects and reflections. I always loved the way that Diana Ross sang Through the Harlow of My Tears. And I thought, is she talking about a London new town?
The town in Essex.
Yeah, through the Stevenage of my sorrows, through the Welling of my woes, etc. The Motown is getting very intense and quite dark. You know, the Four Tops in particular were on a really dark roll then. And the next year you have, obviously, I'm in a Different World by the Four Tops, which is, and You Keep Running Away, is very obsessive, Seven Rooms of Gloom, and all those tunes. It's quite weird, actually.
The thing that strikes me about listening to all of them, and there's an awful lot, you've got 48 tracks over two CDs here, all in mono, I note, which is obviously how they would originally have come out. The thing that strikes me about listening to the lot of them is that they're mainly quite up-tempo, aren't they?
Yes, and this is very much in contrast to the mode of today where you have a lot of power ballads, which I personally can't stand, because ballad then was mainly still the preserve of mums and dads records. The pop stuff was up-tempo, you're absolutely right, and also that's the kind of music I like. I like up-tempo. I hate mid-paced rock. I just think pop music should be fast, or else if you're not going to have it being fast, then you listen to, I don't know, Terry Riley or something where there's no beat at all.
Uh-huh.
So that is my predilection. I'm sure you could find ballads from that year, but a lot of the ballads, as I said, ballads were mums and dads records, and Please Release Me by Engelbert Humperdinck, who was very, very big that year, The Last Waltz and all those records. That just drove me crazy.
Whereas these records were probably all made for people to dance to, for teenagers, hoping that teenagers were going to dance to them, whatever they were, whoever they were by.
I think that's a very good point, and I think that's how singles were chosen. So, for instance, even if you've got a psychedelic group like the 13th Floor Elevators, it's an up-tempo number. You could dance to it. And I think that's very important. So that was still, as you said about your disco, that was why singles were released. They were basic teenage dance fodder, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
So what would you say, there are any lyrical themes that these records had in common?
Drugs. It's the windows of your mind. It's a lot of mind, a lot of dreams. LSD is definitely making an impact in that year. There are some pro-LSD records, like I'm 5 years ahead of my time by the Third Bardo and the 13th Floor Elevators. And then there's a couple of anti-ones, which I find fascinating. There's a record by Rex Garvin and the Mighty Cravers called Believe It or Not, which is hilarious. It's this guy saying, you know, don't take LSD, it's going to send you mad. And then one of my favorites by The Shag, nothing to do with sex, by the way, called Stop and Listen, where the singer's actually saying, you know, everybody's telling me about LSD, telling me it's great. Excuse me, I don't want to hear it.
So that's The Shag, not to be confused with The Shags.
Correct.
Really?
Yeah, they play.
Right. So that's the lyrical stuff. What about the kind of musical themes? Do they have sounds in common, these records, do you think?
I think one of the reasons that I wanted to put them in mono, as you noticed, is that in the original, and actually it was quite hard to do, a lot of the time that the compilation took was actually getting the right mixes, because, of course, everybody's so used to stereo. So when we were getting the masters from the various licensors, as you well know, that's what happens, and it takes a long time to get. A lot of them are in stereo, so that was the problem. What happens in the original mix, as you remember, which is the glory of the single, is that something would leap out at you. from the mix. There would be the actual sound that was highlighted in the mix that was the gimmick. So you have electronic sounds here. You've got it on Yellow Brick Road by Captain Beefheart. You've got the Blossom Clothes, Look at Me, I'm You. You've got a bit of music on Crates. You've got Psych Rock by Liz Epa Sound, which is electronic. So you've got that. And then you've got the psychedelic stuff. You've got the Oscillations in Reflections by Diana Ross. And, you've got strings. It's all getting a bit more complicated. You've got different kind of instruments, a lot of strings, a bit of, East-West Butterfield Blues Band kind of modal East-West in the Behemoth by the Shadows of Night. And then, of course, I Can Hear the Grass Grow with the squeaks in it. So there's a lot of kind of cod psychedelic stuff, which I absolutely love.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's one of the things that I always hated about the band, which is that they said, we got rid of all that psychedelic shit. Excuse me, dancing, backwards, sitars, bring it up.
So what's your personal favourite of the 48 here, John?
They're the personal favourites that I just remember from the time super fondly, like The Hand Don't Fit the Glove by Terry Reid, which was a huge record for me back in the day. And then there's the ones I've heard later, like I'm 5 years ahead of my time. So I pretty much like most of them. It changes all the time. A very special one that I love is Tintin Abbey Vacuum Cleaner, which is really wonderful. It's very psychedelic in a very subtle way. I like all of them, actually.
Well, I was delighted to finally get to hear Dyke and the Blazers doing So Sharp, which I'd never actually heard. I've heard cover versions of it, but never actually heard the original. So, and there it is on this wonderful compilation, John Savage's 1967, The Year Pop Divided. So, John, you said there's another compilation coming after this?
Yes, we are discussing 65 or 68, and I think it's going to be 65.
65, always a wise choice.
Well, I love 68 because you've got really overblown psychedelic records in that. But I think it's going to be 1965, which of course was another fantastic year. I'm actually just looking at the track list this morning and working out how to boil. How many are there? The minute we got, I did 3 CDs worth of stuff, 82 tracks down to 48. So starting the whittling process.
Sounds like fun, actually, John.
It is, and, the people at Ace, Roger Armstrong, Mick Patrick, Liz Buckley, A.D. Prosdell, are just fantastic to work with, and that's also part of it, is that it's fun, and you're talking to people who are passionate about music and also produce very, very high-quality CDs. Nothing is stinted as far as actually getting the permissions, doing the artwork, and that's what I like. It's real attention to detail.
Okay, have fun with it, John. Thanks very much for talking to us. This has been a Word Podcast. If you want to subscribe to Word Podcast, you go to wordpodcast.co.uk.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.